You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. In this episode, we are going to recap some of the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, including Lawrence Butler's Big Thursday, Pete Crow Armstrong's huge week, and shiny-eared Joe Musgrove's dominant start against the Mets. Also, we'll tell you about the latest news around baseball, and of course, give all of you some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But John, welcome back. You weren't here last week, and I think all of the listeners are dying to know, how did the semis go, and if you're in the finals, how are those going currently?
Yeah, the semis were pretty awesome for me. Pretty much won it because Clay Holmes blew a save last Sunday at this point, so 2 weeks ago, and just barely eked out a 6-5-1 win, which is very fun.
Wow.
That being said, though, I'm getting absolutely destroyed in my finals matchup this week because apparently none of my guys want to hit homers, and he's got Aaron Judge. So, yeah, that's kind of how it's going.
Yeah, you don't want to be facing Aaron Judge at any point in this season. It's funny because I do a recap write-up of all of the MVPs from each team in my home league, and I looked at all of the performances. And Aaron Judge last week, I know you said you're facing him this week, but last week, he had 7 home runs and like 17 RBI. Like, yep. How do you beat that guy?
No, we do 2-week playoffs, right? So my playoffs started last week. So I've had to deal with Aaron Judge being an absolute monster and more or less putting this entire matchup out of reach. In the first week. So, and then my opponent had a really good 3-start day where all his pitchers had 6 shutout innings, and were throwing, you know, a lot of strikeouts. And it was just like, all right, I think I've lost. So I'm officially resigned to finishing in second place this year in the league for the second straight year, which I'll take that consistency. So it's not too bad, but it would have been nice to be first.
Now, have you ever won this league?
I have not. No, I've only been in this home league for, I think, 5 years at this point. I can't remember how with COVID, what happened.
But, okay.
I mean, two of the years I finished second. So I'll take that.
I will give you a little bit of solace here and hopefully make you feel better, but in my home league, I finished second 3 times in a row before I finally won for the first time.
Yeah.
So it can happen. I think you're right on the doorstep. You're knocking. You just have to find a way to get Aaron Judge on your team for the finals.
Exactly. Yeah, I think Aaron Judge is the absolute cheat code, and I've tried to avoid picking him up because of the whole injury risk and everything like that, but he's been really, really good the last 2 seasons, and it doesn't look like he's slowing down at any point.
Yeah, it's so funny because you get beat by these guys, right? Like, last year, I was getting beat left and right by Ronald Acuna, and I'm like, that's never going to happen again. If I have the chance, I'll take Acuna. And then you take Acuna, and he gets hurt, and you're like, well.
Yep, that's pretty much happened to me. I had Acuna. I had Mike Trout. Both of them got hurt.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, when you lose, basically, I mean, Mike Trout was, you know, obviously really good for the first month of the season, but, you know, after that, not much there. But Acuna, very slow start to the season, kind of looked like he was turning a corner, and then immediately tears the ACL, which is tough. But, just not great injury luck this season, and the fact that I'm able to finish second, I will take that.
Yeah, that's always good. Hey, second place is always good. You get some money, probably. You can hold your head up high that it was a successful season. You didn't, like, get actually slaughtered and feel like you didn't compete at all. So it's cool that you made the playoffs. It's cool that you were able to come in second. It's not over yet. You never know what can happen, but it's not looking your way. So I get it completely for waving the white flag early, because sometimes you just feel defeated and it's kind of in front of you. The cards are all laid out there. So very tough. For me, it's crazy because in my home league, no team has solidified a playoff spot yet. And there is 2 regular season weeks left this week and then 1 more, and then it's the playoffs. So the fact that in a 10-team home league, no one has secured a playoff spot with pretty much one more week to go is wild. There's going to be some big finishes. One team might get shafted out of the playoffs, so it is going to be interesting. And also this week, I got to meet Doc Gooden, which was really cool. So I mentioned it on the podcast earlier. I think it was last episode.
Yeah.
And I basically had an event at work where it was a meet and greet for Doc to come. He would come by, you get a signed picture, you can bring an additional item for him to sign, and basically, I just chopped it up with him for a little bit. I got his autograph personalized on a jersey, a ball, a picture. We were hosting the event, so I had to take a lot of photos and videos for it to highlight it for social media and whatnot, but it was a really cool event, and Doc was a really, really cool guy. He was awesome with the kids, basically showing them how to throw his four-seam fastball in different pitches and giving them pitch grips. It was a really cool event, so it was awesome. Shout out to you, Dwight Gooden, for coming through and talk a little bit of baseball with you. I maybe would be able to interview him for Pitcherlist. That'd be pretty cool. I would like to get that done. That would be a nice little fun thing to do.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty sick opportunity to get kind of a guy of that stature to be able to have a little conversation with him and see how he's enjoying the game of baseball nowadays.
Yeah, it would be really cool to see Nick interview him and be able to set that up. So I have his info. Maybe we get that working. That'd be really cool. But anyways, before we get into the rest of this episode, just a reminder that all of you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, mainly Spotify and Apple Podcasts are the big ones. We are there or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. So make sure that you follow us and please leave us a 5-star review. If you enjoy listening to the show, it helps us out more than you know. So please, if you have the time, leave us a 5-star review and don't forget to follow. Now, let's get into the news from this past week. Not too long of a list, and there's some good news on here, so that's always good to have. First, we'll start with Robbie Ray of the Giants, who was placed on the 15-day IL on Tuesday with a strained left hamstring. Ray suffered this injury in his start against the Mariners, where he only completed 3 innings. He's eligible to return on September 10th, but it's unclear if he'll be back by that date. Byron Buxton of the Twins could begin a rehab assignment soon, possibly this weekend. Buxton has been out with right hip inflammation. Vinny Pasquantino of the Royals left Thursday's game in the 8th inning against the Astros after Yainer Diaz ran into his glove side hand. It was a bad throw by the pitcher where it was a comebacker, and Diaz kind of ran into his glove, and Pasquantino immediately dropped to the ground in pain in his hand, so hopefully it's not serious. We'll have to wait and see because it literally just happened 30 minutes ago, so we have to wait and see on his status, but hopefully Pasquantino will be okay. Alec Boehm of the Phillies exited Thursday's game with left hand discomfort after hurting his hand on a swing. X-rays came back clean, so consider Boehm day-to-day for now. Rafael Devers of the Red Sox has missed 3 straight games due to soreness in both of his shoulders. Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers went 2 innings in a rehab start. The plan is for Yamamoto to make a couple more rehab starts before rejoining the Dodgers rotation in mid-September. He's missed a lot of time due to triceps tightness. Freddie Freeman of the Dodgers is expected back on Friday after missing 3 straight games due to a hairline fracture in his finger. Tyler Glasnow of the Dodgers is set to resume throwing. Manager Dave Roberts shared optimism that Glasnow would return to the mound this season. Zach Eflin of the Orioles might start Sunday against the Rockies. He's been out with a shoulder injury. Ryan Mountcastle of the Orioles was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, retroactive to August 23rd, with a sprained left wrist. Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles is nearing mound work. He's been out with a lat injury, and there's still no timetable for his return. Shane Boz of the Rays is expected back on Saturday and will start against the Padres. Boz is returning from the flu. Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals was placed on the 10-day IL on Sunday with a fractured middle finger on his right hand. Contreras will be able to avoid surgery, but is likely out until late September, so the injury is about 4 to 6 weeks long to recover. Paul Blackburn of the Mets was placed on the 15-day IL on Sunday due to a right hand contusion. It should be a minimum stay on the IL for him, but if not, he will only miss a little bit of time. Xavier Edwards of the Marlins was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday due to mild back extensor soreness. he'll most likely only miss the minimum amount of time, so if you have Xavier Edwards, prepare for him to return soon. Andrew Abbott of the Reds was placed on the 15-day IL on Friday with a left shoulder strain. Dylan Cruz was called up by the Nationals on Monday. Cruz was drafted in the first round, second overall in the 2023 draft. He was ranked second on MLB Pipeline's prospect rankings for 2024, and he did something cool this week, which we will talk about later. And then last but not least, Jacob deGrom of the Rangers could make his 2024 season debut next week. DeGrom fired two perfect innings earlier this week in his second rehab start, hitting 99 miles per hour and just being a beast, and he figures to be nearing the Rangers rotation. So, if you have Jacob deGrom, if you've been stashing him away all this time, it's time to unleash him, and hopefully he'll be able to give you something down the stretch, maybe come playoff time. But that wraps up all of the news from this past week. John, any comments on this list?
Honestly, I'm just really excited for DeGrom. So
yeah, me too.
That should be good. Like, I have him in a roto league, so he still will be valuable there for the, I guess, the last month that he plays. And maybe that gives a little lift to getting a few extra strikeouts or maybe some nice ratios out of him, even if it's like maybe only 3 to 4 starts.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get out of DeGrom. Now, he might slowly ramp up because in his rehab starts, I believe he's only went like 2 innings maximum. And if he's nearing a return, that means probably one more rehab start and then joining the rotation towards the end of next week. So maybe he goes 4 to 5 innings, depending on pitch count. I don't know what the pitch count limitation will be. There probably will be a limitation on Jacob deGrom. So right out of the gate on the IL, you might want to leave him on there for one start. I mean, he's just a freak, so he's probably going to be great regardless of how many pitches he throws or how many innings he gets through. So you might want to activate him anyway if you just want good ratios and possible strikeouts. But don't expect a lot from deGrom right out of the gate. Maybe in 2 to 3 weeks, he'll be able to give you quality starts and more possible win chances. But right now, I wouldn't expect too much.
It's also kind of weird because it's like at the end of the season. But
yeah,
you know, I'll take a few starts on DeGrom and hopefully that shapes up for an even better 2025.
Yeah, it's cool to see all of these starting pitchers kind of return, right? Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tyler Glasnow, Zach Eflin, Robbie Ray went down, but a lot of people are getting close to returning. Grayson Rodriguez, Jacob deGrom, of course. So it's nice to see that this list was more of like, hey, these guys are returning, rather than, oh, these guys are out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's always good to see that. But before we get into the player performances from this past week, we are going to take our first break. And when we get back, we will start with the hitter and pitcher performances over this past weekend. You won't want to miss it, so stay tuned. We are back, and it's time to talk about the player performances from this past week. We will start with Friday to Sunday, which is August 23rd to August 25th. John, who performed well over the weekend?
Yeah, you already mentioned it. We're going to start off with PCA. Pete Crow Armstrong of the Chicago Cubs went 2 for 3 with a homer, 2 runs, an RBI, and a walk on Friday. We need to give credit where credit's due, and we're starting off our recaps with a guy who hit an inside-the-park homer last Friday. The speedy outfielder made the trip around the bases look pretty easy. I don't know if you ever saw the highlights of this, but it, like, he's fast for sure, but it felt like he completely made it to home, you know, around all 4 bases, like, well before the outfielders could get it the ball in from the outfield. So good job for PCA. Unfortunately, he just really doesn't offer more than a streamer for steals. Got a lot of steals this season, but all his other stats are pretty terrible. None of the advanced metrics also point to a hitter who can offer you more in the other 4 fantasy categories or 5 fantasy categories, depending on what type of league you're in. He did not have a great hit tool as a prospect, though, so I would not expect that to be better. He did manage to hit 20 homers across 3 levels last season, so there is a little bit of a power speed potential with PCA. So perhaps if there's more pop in his bat, and, you know, not the inside the park kind, but the over the fence kind, maybe that helps out PCA in, you know, bumping him up drafts next season. Next guy I talk about, Trevor Larnach of my Minnesota Twins. 3-for-4 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 4 RBI on Saturday. Larnach has really redeemed his career this season, going from a player who looked destined to be a fourth outfielder at best to someone who is solidifying his role next season as a starting corner outfielder for the Twins. Larnach had pretty solid hit and power grades coming out of college and had really good OBP numbers throughout his time in the minors. However, he's had pretty rough strikeout rates while in the majors for the last couple seasons, and essentially the book on him was he's pretty much unable to hit anything besides the fastball. But he's figured a few things out this year, and that's really helped him in decreasing his strikeout rate. It's gotten down to 22%, where it previously was well above 30. He is slashing 260, 328, and 456, which even though those don't sound like great numbers, those are good numbers for Larnach compared to kind of the rest of his career. He's got 14 homers, 45 runs, 45 RBI in 88 games this year. So just imagine what he's going to do next season, assuming he is going to be the starting corner outfielder for the Twins. And then finally, Eugenio Suarez of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He went 4-for-4 with a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI on Sunday. It's been an incredible second half for Eugenio. He's got a 916 OPS to go along with 10 homers, 26 runs, and 31 RBI through 35 games. Since pretty much the All-Star break. It certainly helps, of course, to play on the most prolific team in baseball this season, as the Diamondbacks still hold the league lead in runs this season, with nearly 40 more than the next best team, which is the Yankees. Not to mention, based on year-to-date numbers, Eugenio is currently the 13th best third baseman, and that list includes guys like Gunnar Henderson, Ellie De La Cruz, and Willy Castro, basically guys who've played positions other than third base this season. So I'm not saying that my hot take that Eugenio Suarez is going to be a top 10 third baseman at the beginning of the season is necessarily going to come to fruition, but he definitely is playing like one right now, and I'm really enjoying that.
So for Pete Crow Armstrong, I'm going to talk about him a little bit later on, but he's just having an incredible last 2 weeks, where even the next day on, I think Tuesday it was, he stole 3 bases as well. Like, he's just been on fire. He's been really one of the best hitters for fantasy in those last 2 weeks. And it's cool to see top prospect doing good things. But like you mentioned, he hit a inside the park home run on Friday. And you mentioned how fast he was going. Yeah, it was 14 seconds for him to round the bases. Like, that is unreal. I mean, he literally circled the bases in a blur. And I'm not exaggerating. That was extremely fast. Like, we always tote Ellie for his speed. This was next level. Like, he just circled the bases and was done. It was nuts. So shout out to Pete Crow Armstrong. He looks to be very good and coming through on that prospect pedigree. Trevor Larnach, to me, is someone that's not really on my radar. I think he might be a sleeper next season if he does get everyday playing time at this level, because those numbers aren't bad. For 88 games, 14 homers, 45 runs, and 45 RBI, that's really good, and the slash line is very good as well. So I think he has potential as long as he gets everyday playing time. But for now, he's really only rosterable in 5 outfield leagues and OBP formats, really. I mean, the 260 average actually isn't bad. So he's probably good in all formats, but mainly OBP, because 328 is pretty solid. And the numbers that he's giving you is pretty good too. So Larnach is definitely a name to keep out on the lookout for, because if next season he has an everyday role, he might be a sleeper in drafts for me. And then Eugenio Suarez, incredible second half, as you mentioned. He might just be a top 10 third baseman, like you mentioned, in the preseason. And I was a fan of it. I have always liked Eugenio Suarez, and I know what he's capable of, and it's certainly like this. And now he's obviously doing it in one big go rather than throughout the whole season, because he kind of stunk to begin the season, which was underwhelming, but he's been so good as of late that he's made up for it in full. So hopefully he can finish the year strong, because he has been great. I do have a lot of shares of him, so that helps, but he's been very, very good. So John, I like your preseason call of Eugenio Suarez.
Yeah, surprisingly, I have no shares of Eugenio, but
wow.
he's been a lot of fun. He's been a lot of fun the last couple months. All right, moving on to pitchers. We are going to start with Joe Musgrove of the San Diego Padres. Going up against your Mets, got the win in this one. 7 innings with no one runs, 1 hit, no walks, and 9 strikeouts. This really felt like vintage Musgrove, as he's had a string of bad starts. Of course, that's dating back to before he went on the IL back in May. This was his third game back from the injured list. His pitches were all on point in this one, especially his cutter, which he was using really well against left-handed batters, kind of bringing it to them on the inside. His curveball was also ridiculous. On just 9 thrown, he stole 4 called strikes. His four-seamer and sweeper rounded out the majority of his pitches, and he used those to get both whiffs and called strikes. Can we say Musgrove is back? I think we can. It was one start against the Mets, of course, but he looks like what we expected Musgrove to be before all these just random injuries started taking him down. So definitely someone to keep an eye out there. Next, we're going to talk about Beaudin Francis, of course, of the Toronto Blue Jays, going up against the Angels. 8 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 3 walks, and 12 strikeouts. I know we just talked about Beaudin last week, but this is a little bit of a ridiculous start. He actually had a no-hitter, if you missed this, going into the 9th inning before Taylor Ward decided to ruin the fun with a homer right in the first at-bat of the 9th inning. So that shut down that no-hitter chance. That being said, though, he was getting a little fortunate as he gave up 12 balls in play. According to RPL metric Hit Luck, Francis should actually give it up 7 hits on the day based on his pitches, which kind of reminds me of the time when Reed Detmers threw a no-hitter. I think it was last season. He was getting incredible hit luck there as well. And I mean, honestly, when you get a no-hitter, most of the time there's a little bit of a hit luck there. But Beaudin definitely kind of was a little lucky. That being said, his four-seamer was on fire, earning 10 whiffs, while his great splitter was able to get 8 called strikes on this one. Again, he really didn't showcase a third pitch, so if one of his two pitches isn't doing so hot, beware. That being said, though, he just had a good game today, and his splitter was also off, but his fastball was incredible. So, I don't know. Beaudin is kind of figuring stuff out really well. It's working out for him. He's on a nice little hot streak, so if you've got some space on your fantasy team and he's available on your wire, maybe it's someone to keep an eye out depending on what his matchups look like next. Finally, DJ Hers of the Nationals went up against Atlanta, got a no decision, 5 innings, no one runs, 1 hit, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts. We haven't talked too much about Hers this season, although frankly, we just really don't talk about Nationals pitchers too much beyond Mackenzie Gore, and even he hasn't really been doing so hot this season. This probably was Hers' best start of the season. He controlled the Atlanta batters using his four-seamer and changeup, basically going with the perfect Blake Snell blueprint with four-seamers up, changeups down. His slider was good enough as well as a secondary pitch, earning 5 whiffs on 19 thrown. That being said, though, he was probably helped out by earning 12 foul balls on his four-seamer, allowing him to get to 8 strikeouts in just 5 innings of work. Basically, lots of contact, but lots of contact that didn't result in anything, so that kind of helped Hers out. He spotted that changeup well, though. It could do good things against the Cubs come Friday, though.
So for Joe Musgrove, this was a really impressive start because, as you mentioned, after he came back from the IL, he kind of stunk. He wasn't doing very good. He was slow to build back up. It was very interesting. So it wasn't classic Musgrove that you'd expect, but this one, he was fully in his groove. He only gave up 1 hit to the Mets, and it's not like the Mets are a bad offense. They've been on fire. They've been really good, and he just completely shut them down. So this was a very impressive start from Joe Musgrove. 41% CSW is ridiculous, so he did great. And this was only on 75 pitches, by the way. Yeah. So That's just really impressive stuff out of Musgrove. However, his ears weren't shiny. And they haven't been shiny since that one playoff start. So I still have questions, Joe Musgrove. I'm still mad about that as a Mets fan. But regardless, he dominated the Mets on Friday. So shout out to you, Joe Musgrove. I think he's also back. I would be comfortable starting him every week here on out against any matchup because Musgrove is that good when he's healthy. For Beaudin Francis, I also found out that his name is Beaudin, not Beaudin.
Right. It's Beaudin. It's yeah. Yeah.
I've been calling him Beaudin the entire time. Like, since I found out about him, I've been calling him Beaudin. And then I was watching his starts for the last 3 starts. I don't know. And they kept saying Beaudin. And I was like, okay, I guess your name is Beaudin. So with him, he's been incredible. I mean, his last 4 starts have been against the Angels, the Cubs, the Angels, and the Red Sox as of just recently. And he's given up like 2 earned runs in 4 starts. His whip has been under .50. In each of those 4 starts, 4 quality starts, all 7 innings or more, averaging way over a strikeout per inning. I mean, just incredible stuff. He almost had a no-hitter against the Angels, like you mentioned. Just incredible. Did you actually see Taylor Ward's comments on Beaudin Francis after the almost no-hitter?
No, I didn't see that.
he was like, oh, his stuff was very hittable. Like, he was being super salty. He's like, oh, what he threw to other guys might have been nasty. Everyone was talking in the dugout about his movement and him being nasty, but everything I got looked really hittable. So then hit the ball. I mean, you got – he was already tired in the ninth inning throwing 100-plus pitches, and he gave you a pitch that you ended up hitting for a home run. But come on, man. Don't be a salty guy like that, Taylor Ward. What are you doing? So that kind of upset me. What are you doing there? Yeah. And then – DJ Hurz, he's been pretty solid in a few different starts. Like you mentioned, he can execute the Blake Snell blueprint. When he doesn't, the starts are kind of ugly. But when he does stuff like this. No earned runs, 8 strikeouts, especially against Atlanta. Not the best offense this year, but still formidable. So good stuff out of DJ Hurz. Very impressive. And this list in total is a lot of promising names. I'm just happy that in one league, I drafted Bowden Francis in a I believe it was a best ball league, and he's just putting up numbers on the board for me now.
Yeah, I mean, so Bowden today against the Red Sox, 7 innings, 1 hit, 5 strikeouts, which is insane. And like I mentioned, his splitter actually didn't really earn a bunch of strikes. It was really just the strength of his fastball. So that fastball, I guess, is really, really solid. He gets Philly next, which is a little scary.
Yeah.
So there is that, right? There's a potential to come back down to earth there. He's been on a really incredible roll, and sometimes you just go with a guy who's got the hot hand.
Yeah, I think Bowden Francis is going to be a very big sleeper for me next year. I am going to be all in on him, I think, in draft. Just from what I've seen in these past few starts, I really like what I see, and I think I'm going to be targeting him a lot, unless he shoots up draft boards like crazy, which he probably will, because everyone in total is so smart with fantasy baseball these days. So we'll see on that, but I am definitely going to have a lot of shares of Bowden Francis. Moving on to Monday, August 26th, thanks to Ryan Clark for the pulled torque hitter recap article. We start with Salvador Perez of the Royals, who went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 6 RBI, and a walk. Salvi actually had a doubleheader on Monday, and he went 5-for-7 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 6 RBI. However, those 2 homers, 6 RBI, and 2 of the 3 runs all came in the second game of the doubleheader, so I thought I'd highlight that game specifically. The Royals captain has really settled into his role of predominantly DHing, and has had an excellent year offensively because of it. Salvi's slash line is the best we've seen since 2021, or as far back as his rookie season in 2013, of 281, 340, 489. He's also up to 25 home runs, 94 RBI, and 55 runs scored. Salvi remains to be a top 5 catcher in fantasy as long as he has that catcher eligibility. And next we have Manny Machado of the Padres, who went 2-for-4 with a double, a home run, 3 runs, 3 RBI, and a walk. This season, Machado has put up very basic type numbers. They're not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but for Machado, they're a little underwhelming. The slash line is good, coming in at 273, 325, 462. He has 22 home runs, 65 runs, and 79 RBI with 8 stolen bases. The 8 steals is definitely nice to have and is higher than usual for Machado, but the homers, the runs, and RBI are all a little lacking with what you expect from him. Machado is one of those players, though, that can go on a run and finish strong, which is why you draft him in the first 4 rounds every single year. Maybe Machado will reach that 30 home run and 90-plus RBI for a 3rd straight season if he manages to catch fire in the remaining, I don't know, 30 games or so. So we'll have to see if Machado can do just that.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we always talk about Machado during drafts, it's the number for him is always, you know, how many steals is he going to get, right? Like, because obviously you've got guys like Joe Ram who get a ton of steals. You know, now we've got guys like Gunner and Ellie with third base eligibility in some leagues, right? Like, these guys who have, like, have some speed. And then Machado's like, well, he does everything else well, right? He just doesn't get a bunch of steals. And that's what kind of maybe sometimes drives his draft stock down. But honestly, you know, you'll take the 8 steals from Machado and everything else looks pretty nice. And like you said, you could finish with 30 home runs and 90 RBIs in a season again. That'd be pretty sick. And then with Salvi, I love Salvi so much. Like, he plays for the Royals, so it kind of sucks that he's in my division. But at the same time, he's just been so consistent and so good. So big fan of Salvi, except for that one year where he like had a downturn and that kind of sucked. But yeah, he's been really, really solid this season. Getting first base eligibility too, so it's not that important, but it does make him a little bit more easy to build around because he has some multi-positional eligibility there as well. Yeah, two really solid guys for sure.
Yeah, you bring up two good points. So for one, even when Salvador Perez stops catching, inevitably he's going to, right? Like, he's been catching his whole career and those knees are taxed. So he'll probably stop catching at some point, maybe not next year, maybe not the year after that, but he's slowly being moved away from the catcher position. And if he's predominantly DHing, that's cool. But if he plays first base and has that eligibility, I would consider him a top 10 first baseman for fantasy baseball. Yeah. So he's still going to be valuable no matter what. If he is util only, that might be a little bit of a hindrance, but if he has catcher eligibility or first base, obviously catcher is the most ideal. Even if he has just those two, I think he's going to be worth it for fantasy. And then for Machado, like you mentioned, the steals really helps Machado's value. I always pin in drafts for Machado to be a 30 home run, 90 RBI with a 260 to 270 average, 340 OBP kind of guy. And he's doing that this season, essentially. But I think Machado is either a steal or fair value based on how many steals he gets. So if he gets two steals in a season, then you probably just got regular value since he does everything else so well. But if he gives you 10 steals, that's where it makes up a huge ground where now you have a 30 homer, 90 run, 90 RBI, 10 stolen base guy at third base that you got in round three or four. So that really sets him apart, but it's so hit or miss whether he steals or not.
Yeah, I will say, though, if Machado I shouldn't say if Machado somehow was in the fourth round because he was showing up there in a couple drafts I remember. But he really shouldn't be there after the third, in my opinion. He's still a top five third baseman for sure.
Yeah, I think this season, out of all of them, his value was suppressed a little bit, mainly because third base was so deep, at least in everyone's eyes. Yeah. So I think that's why Machado had a little bit of a value hit. It was mainly like the third round he was going in. So I think in a few drafts, depending on what size league you're in, of course, if you're in an 8 or 10 or 12 team league, he might have went to the third or fourth round. But in those 15 team leagues, he was like a second rounder. So it's tough with Machado's value, but you can really get a lot more value if he is stealing bases. So that's definitely something, the plus side that Machado has. Moving on to pitchers for Monday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the Madden 24 debut SP Roundup article. We'll start with Bryce Miller of the Mariners, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts against the Rays. Miller has really impressed me this season. Obviously, this particular start came against the Rays, so it's not super impressive, but in totality for the season, Miller has a 3.23 ERA, a 0.98 whip, 143 strikeouts in 150.2 innings pitched, and a 10-7 record. We all know that Bryce Miller has a great fastball, and on certain days, the curveball looks good too, but we still need to see legitimate secondaries to offset the fastball for him to have continued success throughout his career. For now, though, he's been a stud, and I will absolutely take these numbers, even though he doesn't have a really great secondary to complement that fastball. I mean, 34% CSW, 14 whiffs, and only 91 pitches for 7 innings pitched against the Rays. You'll love to see it. So shout out to you, Bryce Miller. And then we have Jose Berríos of the Blue Jays, who went 7.2 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 8 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts against the Red Sox. The great undulator has done it again, a decent 27% CSW and 9 whiffs, but Boston isn't an easy lineup to tackle, and Berríos looked great out there. This was probably one of the harder matchups for Berríos for the remainder of the season, so if you roster him, you should feel pretty good about deploying him for the rest of the home stretch. However, with Berríos, you never know. He did look great in this one, and I expect him to finish the season strong, but you just never know with the great undulator.
Yeah, that's always the problem with Berríos, right? It's like he's kind of like last year Chris Bassitt, where it was just matchup agnostic. Doesn't matter who it is, he's going to do really well. Also, doesn't matter who it is, he's going to do poorly, like randomly here and there.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah.
Big with time. Berríos, it's like a little bit more, I don't know if consistent is the right term. It's not that he does bad. He could be bad against anyone and he could be good against everyone. He's just like really average.
Yeah, he's very mid across the board. Yeah
exactly. Yeah. And like every single season, it's like, yep, he ends up with that ERA and that whip. And that's kind of what we expected out of him, even if the season like was kind of all over the place, right? He still ends up where we kind of expected him to be. with Bryce Miller, it is incredible that he's doing this without a legitimate secondary, right? Like, his fastball has completely carried him this entire season. And those numbers are incredible, right? 143 Ks in 150 innings, like, not a strikeout inning, but when you don't have a bunch of secondaries, the fact that he's doing that is pretty impressive. So it kind of sucks that Seattle wasn't able to get him a few more wins in this one, because he's definitely pitched like he should deserve more. But in the same way, he's been really good this year. That entire Mariners rotation's been really good. I think it's just kind of a little bit of interesting. He's going to get more velocity in drafts next year, and he might not deserve it. So not that his stat line this year is bad, but it's just more so like, can we really trust him next season to kind of replicate everything, even though he really only has, like, you know, 1.5 pitches.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. I also really am impressed with Bryce Miller, like I mentioned before. I think that he's been solid. I thought that just having that fastball would really catch up to him and teams would start figuring it out and start seeing it better and hitting it more, but they haven't. So he's clearly doing something right. It would be amazing in just a perfect fairy tale world that Bryce Miller develops two additional secondaries that are equally as disgusting as his fastball and he becomes an ace. I don't think he'll become that, but if he can manage a 350 to 380 ERA for his career, I really like him for fantasy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's a number that I will definitely stay behind.
100%.
All right, moving on to Tuesday then. Thanks to Mark Steenbeker for the Tovar the Great hitter recap article. We're going to start with Seiya Suzuki of the Cubs. 2-for-4 with a home run, 2 runs, 2 RBI, and a walk. We last talked about Seiya about a month ago when he was batting .264 with an .808 OPS. At the time, we said, you know, he's been a solid player this season. He's performing at around his ADP, and that's really good. That being said, though, he's only improved since that moment, as he now has a .276 average with an .842 OPS. So, yes, some smaller incremental gains, but gains nonetheless. He's also reached 19 homers with this blast on Tuesday and has 60-plus runs and RBI. He's also chipped in 11 steals, too. It's rare to get a 5-category guy in the 8th or 9th round, and that's exactly where Seiya is giving you this season. So, really solid output from him, and yeah, he's just been playing really good, and I think this is only going to help his case to kind of move up drafts a little bit, or at least move up the outfielder rankings a little bit next season. A new guy who is joining the outfielder ranks, though, is O'Neill Cruz of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Went 4-for-4 with a double, 2 RBI, and a stolen base on Tuesday. Of course, the big news is that Pittsburgh is moving him to play center field, which he's never played before, and I think that gives him a little bit intrigue next season, because he'll be shortstop and outfield eligible. As we've mentioned plenty of times before, Cruz is still struggling with a high strikeout rate this season, but in the second half of the season, he started to take more advantage with his speed, stealing 11 bases in 34 games, as opposed to 7 in 85 games during the first half of the season. He's been in a little bit of a power drought in August. He only has 1 homer, which is kind of unfortunate. But on the flip side, he's also hitting .383 with a 24% strikeout rate. So, to be honest, I'll just take any improvement I can get from Cruz. If he's, you know, somehow not hitting a lot of homers but getting a lot of average and steals, I'll take that. If he's hitting a lot of homers and doesn't have a great average but is still getting some steals, I'll take that. We just don't want him to be super one-dimensional. And I think if he can contribute in at least like 2 to 3 categories, that makes him really interesting for fantasy.
So, for Seiya Suzuki, he's been incredible, and I think the main concern for him is health. Every season so far, he's managed to get injured, and that's the key. If he could stay on the field for an entire season, I think that he can be so well worth his value and more in fantasy drafts, because he can give you 30-plus homers. He can give you 100 RBI. He can give you 10 to 20 steals. I mean, there's a lot to like about Seiya Suzuki, and I am going to be all in on him next season. I really like him, especially if his value is going to be like the 8th to 12th round, somewhere in that range, depending on league size. Mm-hmm. I'll take him all day there. I just hope that he can stay healthy for a whole year, because he is great, and he's been so good this season that I just want to roster him. Like, I feel really good about Seiya Suzuki. And then O'Neill Cruz, he's actually on a 9-game hitting streak right now.
Yeah.
And he's been so good in the month of August that it's great to see him being able to turn things around. Like, the power's the one thing I'm shocked hasn't really come around fully. He goes in big stretches where he's not hitting homers, but then he'll go in big spurts where he starts hitting nukes. So I would love to see the power take a step forward. If he could finish this year with 25 home runs and 20 stolen bases, I'd be thrilled. And especially, like you said, with that shortstop and now new outfield eligibility, which should kick into your fantasy leagues probably sometime next week, depending on if he starts in the outfield. Like on Yahoo, I know it's only 5 games started to get the eligibility. So on that platform, he'll have outfield eligibility soon. I know in others, it's 10 games started or 15 games started. So just keep an eye out on O'Neill Cruz and see what your league settings are for when he gets eligibility on the platform that you play on. But shortstop and outfield eligibility moving forward is very interesting because that's a mix you don't really see from players. So to be able to move him from the infield to the outfield, from a middle infielder spot to an outfield spot, can be very helpful for just in total for the season. So I like it. It's very sketch. I mean, putting him into a position that he's never played before. I don't know how good that's going to go, especially for his ankle and leg. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the move to center field, but in general, O'Neill Cruz is a generational type talent. And if he could just start tapping into that power for home runs, he's going to be unbelievably good because his exit velocities and how hard he hits the ball, they're just so impressive. And the fact that he's going to have a 2020 season this year in what it will be his first full season in the majors is very impressive. So I think big things are ahead for O'Neill Cruz.
You know what the lucky thing for us is, though? We don't care about defense, so who cares if he plays center?
I just hope he doesn't get hurt. I don't care about the defense. I don't care if he looks like a fool out there. Just do not get hurt, my friend.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when Royce Lewis two seasons ago, played center for the Twins, and mm-hmm. in his first game, he tore his ACL. So
exactly. That's what I don't want to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, let's move on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick Pollock for the best PC Games SP Brandup article. We're going to start with the title boy, Patrick Corbin. I can't believe we're talking about Patrick Corbin, guys. I can't believe we're talking about two Nationals pitchers in the same week. Going up against the Yankees, of all teams, got a win. 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Here's the thing. Nick loves Corbin's new cutter. It earned a 30% CSW on 27th or thrown. The nice thing about it is mainly how it sets up his two other main pitches, the slider and the sinker. As a southpaw, he throws the cutter inside in order to get backfoot sliders to work, and against lefties, he goes sinkers for called strikes and tries to finish up batters with the slider. Here's what you should get excited about Corbin. He gets Miami, Pittsburgh, and then Miami again for his next 3 starts. And this might be the first time you actually feel good about a Corbin start in 4 years, maybe? 3 years? So, yeah, Corbin on an absolute roll, and love to see that. Another pitcher, Sean Manaea of the Mets, Arizona, got the win there. 6.2 innings, 3 earned runs, 4 hits, no walks, and 11 strikeouts. Who cares that it's the best offense in the league? Because Sean Manaea certainly doesn't. This was his 4th double-digit strikeout game of the season, and even with 3 earned runs, the Mets offense obliged him with a win. Four-seamer is doing work up in the zone with 8 whips, 6 called strikes. Good for a 58% CSW. His sinker and sweeper were also incredible. Other than a random blip against Seattle 3 starts ago, Manaea's had 5 quality starts in his last 6 starts and gets the gift of the White Sox and then Cincy in Citi Field in his next 2 starts. Manaea's been on an absolute roll. We've talked about him week in and week out. Just been so good. And honestly, I did not expect this season out of him because even last year he was kind of just on the fringes with I believe he was with the Giants.
Yep.
And now with the Mets, like he's had this kind of resurgence in his career in the second half of the season.
So for Patrick Corbin, no comment. No, I'm joking. It's crazy that we're actually talking about Patrick Corbin, and even crazier that I'd almost recommend him as a streamer for those 3 matchups. Like I can't believe those words just came out of my mouth right there. It almost felt like I was throwing up, but I was saying words.
Right,
so
yeah.
That's crazy. But Patrick Corbin was really good in this one, and those 3 matchups are very good. So if you need someone, Patrick Corbin might be someone that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have no confidence in saying those words, but it's crazy that Patrick Corbin's even relevant in 2024.
Completely, yep. It's actually incredible that he's still pitching in 2024 because he's had some awful seasons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, he had one of the worst ERAs, I think, for an entire season. It was like 684 or something.
Yeah.
As a starter with more than like 12 starts or something. I forget what the metric was, but he was one of the worst pitchers in baseball one year. And that was like after being one of the best pitchers in baseball. So I don't know what's going on with Patrick Corbin. He's clearly got some good moments, but then he's also has the capabilities of being the worst pitcher in all of baseball. So I don't get him. He's an enigma. I don't understand. But someone who's not an enigma is Sean Manaea. And I have always been a Sean Manaea fan, even since the early days on the Oakland A's. I always liked his stuff and his delivery, and I thought he was always, I guess, underestimated. And then he made a few tweaks, and just recently it came out that he has been copying Chris Sale's delivery.
Huh.
And that has been leading to this success. Like, he's been studying Chris Sale and how he, you know, gets rid of the ball and the angle he attacks from, and it's clearly working. I mean, he has been so good. As you mentioned, 5 quality starts in his last 6 starts. I've watched every single one of them, being a Mets fan. And he just looks great. Outside of that one start, like you said, against the Mariners, which was just a random bad day, he's been incredible. And I really hope that he stays on the Mets for another season. I know we have a 2-year deal with him, but I just hope he doesn't opt out, because I really love Sean Manaea. It's great to see it all clicking for him. The velocity is looking good. His arm angle looks good. So I'm all in on Sean Manaea. But we are going to take our last break, and when we come back, we will talk about Wednesday, Thursday, and give you all some streamers for the following week. Stay tuned. All right, we are back, and it's time to get into Wednesday's player performances from August 28th. Thanks to Scott McDermott for the 2-hap and 2-hold hitter recap article. We'll start with Yordan Alvarez of the Astros, who went 4-for-4 with 3 home runs, 3 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Those were Yordan's 26th, 27th, and 28th homers of the year. There's really not much to be said about Yordan. We know who he is at this point. When he's healthy, he's one of the most consistent fantasy contributors out there, in regards to the power department, of course. Yordan should once again finish the season with over 30 home runs and 90 RBI, leading to his easy end of the first to second round value. He is just so good, and that Astros lineup is ridiculous. Even with Kyle Tucker being in limbo, Yordan Alvarez is just producing on a level that we all expect him to. Next, we have Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks, who went 2-for-5 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 5 RBI. In the month of August, Carroll has 9 home runs, 4 triples, and 21 RBI. He is back. The only thing that's not back is the steals, which is pretty disappointing. However, when he's homering at the rate that he is right now, we're not going to complain too much about the lack of steals. I mean, you can't really steal when you're not on base because you're circling them, so I don't blame Corbin Carroll, but hopefully those steals will come when he gets on base to not a home run. The second homer that Carroll hit in this game was a go-ahead grand slam in the bottom of the 8th off of Edwin Diaz. So pretty good stuff there from Carroll. It's great that Carroll is finishing the season strong and giving fantasy managers that drafted him in the first round something to be happy about, because most people were taking him 4, 5, 6 overall, and he was stinking. So it's great to see him giving us something to use down this playoff stretch. And then lastly, shout out to Dylan Cruz, who I mentioned at the top of the show got called up by the Nationals. He hit his first home run on Wednesday off of Carlos Rodon. So welcome to the big leagues, Dylan Cruz.
All right, so let's just say this is a 2025 draft. Do you take Carroll in the first round?
That is a question I was hoping you wouldn't ask me. No, it's tough, man. It's so tough because it's so very clear the potential that Corbin Carroll has, right? Mm-hmm. He's getting better against lefties now again. He's just a good hitter overall. I mean, he won Rookie of the Year in his first season. He had 50 stolen bases, 20 home runs. He's very good. A realistic expectation from Corbin Carroll for me is 15 home runs, 40 stolen bases. That is what I expect when I draft Corbin Carroll. Of course, I would love 20 home runs. I would love 25 home runs. I would love a million home runs. But you're probably not going to get that from Corbin Carroll. For the steals, you expect 40, and you'd be happy with anything over that. But this season, he's up to 17 home runs, which, once again, he's kind of overperforming the homer metric that I would set for him. And he's underperforming the stolen base metric that I would put for him. So my overall answer is I think he's an end of the first round, beginning of the second round type guy. Mm-hmm. Outfield is still not the greatest position. It's still not that deep. And he provides something that not a lot of guys do. But if you're going to draft Corbin Carroll in the first round or second round, where does that put Jaren Duran? Because Jaren Duran a first-round player? Like, I don't feel good about that for some reason. He's having a fantastic season.
Yeah.
But I don't really necessarily have the faith that I do in Jaren Duran that I do in Corbin Carroll. And once again, that's probably just kind of blindsided because Corbin Carroll's only played one season in the bigs. And that season was great. I mean, it was one of the best rookie seasons that we've seen in recent times. So, you know, you can't fault me for giving more faith into Corbin Carroll. But if this is his sophomore slump and he's going to score 100-plus runs, probably hit 20 home runs, 70 RBI, and probably like 30 stolen bases, yeah, give me him at the end of the first round. I feel fine about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the weird thing with Duran is the hit, the power, right, has not necessarily been like a thing that he was known for, right?
Right.
So jumping up to 20 homers is kind of surprising. At the end of the day, though, he is a lefty who plays half his games at Fenway, right?
Yep.
So that plays, you know, right? Like, even if it's not a ton of homers, let's just say, yeah, the 20 homers this season, let's just say it's a little bit of an aberration. What, 10 of those are doubles now off the monster, right?
Right.
Something like that. So you don't get necessarily the power production from Duran. I mean, the ISO is incredibly high this season compared to where it's been in the past. So definitely some interesting numbers there to look at in the offseason, I think. Because, yeah, Duran's kind of come out of nowhere and become an MVP candidate. Now he's obviously not going to win it, but, you know, he's a legitimate guy in that conversation. And similar to Corbin Carroll, they both have had really, really good seasons. And the next season is kind of the interesting, like, okay, is this sustainable? The interesting thing about Carroll, actually, is that his ISO this season is lower, which, again, not that unexpected.
Right.
Last season was so good. But, you know, his ISO is around 189 this year. That's kind of what you expect-ish for like a really good hitter, right? Yeah, it's interesting. I think the next question, which I won't ask you to answer, but the interesting thing is, like, all right, then what happens when you throw Yordan into the mix, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's a different level there. It's so weird because, you know, you draft these guys with upside, for instance, right? Alongside the guys that you just expect a really high floor out of, right? Like,
yes.
Freddie Freeman goes next to Jose Ramirez in drafts. Jose Ramirez, you're obviously going for a 30-30 guy at a position that's kind of weak. And then for Freddie Freeman, you're getting probably one of the best floors at a more prominent position.
Yes.
So it's hard to compare like a Yordan to a Jaren Duran or a Corbin Carroll because they just give you completely different things.
Right.
I expect Yordan to have 140 plus like a 50 home run season 1 year. Like, I just expect that if he's fully healthy and the Astros are all clicking. Like, I could see Yordan having like a 45 home run season with 140 RBI. Like, it's bound to happen at some point. So, you know, one of those years is going to happen, and then we're going to be like, oh, is Yordan a number two overall pick? Like, so it's hard to really put those guys against each other. But the one thing I wanted to comment on Jaren Duran before we move on to the pitchers is Duran has really good metrics for, you know, pitcher list metrics, baseball savant metrics. His expected batting average is great. Expected slugging is great. He's in the red all around on the stuff that matters. So I really like that he's performed well on the power side of things because I think his stolen bases with that 96th percentile sprint speed is real. I think he's going to steal 40 bases pretty much every year, 30 to 40. The power is going to be in question. And that's the same thing with Corbin Carroll. It's like, who do you believe in more? And what offense do you like more? Because you're then going for who's going to score more runs, who's going to hit for more RBI. It's all about the little things. Like, do you believe in one more than the other? And I think they're going to go hand in hand. I think that both Carroll and Duran will be drafted somewhere in the second round on average. And I think they'll go one in each other. Like, I think that once Carroll leaves the board, Duran will go sometime in the next two picks or vice versa. So, yeah, I just think they have very similar profiles. I would rather Corbin Carroll because I think the speed upside is just higher because for some reason the Red Sox don't have a big running philosophy.
Sure.
And I feel like the Diamondbacks just let Corbin do whatever he wants. So in that regards, I kind of lean Carroll, but both are great players. But moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, thanks to Nick Pollock for the A Lighter Note SP Roundup article, we'll start with Brian Baio of the Red Sox, who went 8 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the Blue Jays. Brian Bello, how I've disliked you all season. What do you do now? Dominate, of course. 8 innings pitched was actually the deepest that Bello has ever went into a game in his career. His sinker was backdooring right-handed hitters while the changeup was landing away to left-handed batters. It was beautiful. Bello has been dealing as of late, besides the start before this one. And if he's available on your wire, his schedule is pretty good to end the season, so it might be worth grabbing him and starting him as one of the bigger Brian Bello haters of the year who believed in him at the start and then got disappointed. I'm back to saying, hey, you could trust him. And then also shout out to Chris Bassitt, who pitched amazingly on the other side of this matchup as well. Bassitt went 6.2 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Next, we have Spencer Arrighetti of the Astros, who went 7.2 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 4 walks, and 11 strikeouts against the Phillies. Spencer Spaghetti, the Pasta Pirate, has had some pretty remarkable starts at times this season, and this is one of them for sure. 19 whiffs for a gallows pole against a great Phillies offense, and a 35% CSW to boot. Arrighetti's sweeper, four-seamer, changeup, and curveball were all nasty in this one, and like Bello, he too has a great schedule to end the season, so if he's out there, which I doubt it because he's gained a lot of traction lately, then I would pick him up because Arrighetti's been fantastic and he's putting the Astros in a pickle for what to do with their rotation. And then lastly, shout out to the title boy himself, Jack Leiter of the Rangers, who was called back up on Wednesday. He went 4 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts against the White Sox. Leiter was up earlier this season and got decimated, but after tweaking some things in the minors, he could be a legitimate upside arm for fantasy. His four-seam fastball now comes in at 97-plus miles per hour, with nearly 7 feet of extension, a flat attack angle, and a solid IVB. His slider is filthy too. The only thing that we have to see Leiter do is command the ball a bit better. If he can, the sky is the limit, so maybe he doesn't give you too much down the stretch in terms of longevity and quality starts, but in a keeper league or in those redraft leagues, if you want to pick him up and hopefully bank some wins and get some good starts, Jack Leiter might be someone you're interested in.
Yeah, we've talked about Bello a lot on this podcast, kind of our love-hate relationship with him. And the interesting thing about Bello is that unlike all the other Red Sox pitchers who were kind of cruising by going fastball, slider, right? And ultimately that's kind of caught up to them as the season has gone on. Bello is kind of more working with that changeup, right? When the changeup is on, that's when he's on. And it's kind of interesting to see him do well. It is very annoying, though, because it's just so inconsistent. I'd love to see more consistency. I'd love to see him be a guy who I'd be, like, confident to roster for an entire season. But it's still tough because he has such great starts like this, and then, like, he'll just drop a dud against the next one. So a little frustrating there. Arrighetti has definitely played himself into a guy who is a must roster. And basically, he's gone from streamer about, like, a month ago, maybe, to a guy who has to be picked up. And so, yeah, if he's available somehow in your leagues, definitely go check him out there.
Yeah, I was super excited about Bello coming into the season because he was learning his slider from Pedro Martinez. And I just said, wow, if he's learning a pitch like that and it looks good in spring training, I'm all in on this guy. And then he was just such a disappointment. And we talked about him a lot on the show, like you said. And I was just all in on him. And then he just let me down. And right now he's back. So as someone who doesn't believe in him at all anymore, or at least for the season, I would recommend picking him up because he's been very good and his schedule is leaning towards him being very good the rest of the way.
Yep. All right, moving on to Thursday's games. We're going to start off with Matt Olson, 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 3 RBI, and 2 homers. Olson launched 2 homers off Christopher Sanchez. The first one at 107 miles an hour and the second one at 110. Absolute no doubters. Easily the best month of his season is August based on OPS. He had an 870 prior to this game. Of course, this really doesn't excuse his poor first half of the season where he had a league average OPS, but at least you're getting something from Olson right on the cusp of playoff season, so something is kind of better than nothing, at least for him. Kyle Stowers, 3-for-6, a run, 4 RBI for Miami. Since being traded from Baltimore, Stowers has had a pretty tough time adjusting to his new team. Through 26 games, he's barely batting above the Mendoza line. However, in a run-filled game between the Marlins and the Rockies today, Stowers made a significant difference with a 2-run double and a 4th, and also tacked on a RBI single in the 9th after it was pretty much over. He's played in almost every single game since being traded, either as a pinch hitter or as the starter. But he's bounced around the lineup, batting as high as second, but also being relegated to the eight hole as well. Not a lot of value here fantasy-wise, but certainly someone to keep an eye on in drafts next season. And then finally, had to shout out Lawrence Butler, 3-for-4 with 3 homers, 3 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Jokingly, is he Kyle Schwarber light? He had 3 homers from the leadoff spot. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough to get the A's the win on Thursday, but this was actually Butler's second game with 3 homers. In 310 at-bats this season, Butler's got 19 homers, 51 RBI, and an 816 OPS. I mean, that's really good numbers. If you extrapolate out that out to a full season, that's almost 40 homers and over 100 RBI. That will work in fantasy baseball. Of course, it's hard to say if this is a flash in the pan for Butler. He's been really, really good, though. And, of course, next year he gets to play at a minor league stadium. So if this power is real, and if the A's continue to choose to bat him leadoff, there's some fun opportunities for Butler next year.
Yeah, so this was a great day for me in my home league because I picked up Butler and I have Matt Olson. So I got 5 home runs between 5 hits. So that's pretty good. And these two guys, first of all, I'll talk about Olson first. I talked about him last episode and I said that, hey, he was not even going to hit 30 home runs according to other people. But I told you that they come in bunches and he's heating up. So I think hitting 30 home runs is going to be no problem. He is going to start hitting them in bunches, coming at a perfect time as well. Obviously, you would have loved for him to do this all season long, hit 40, 50 homers again, whatever it may be. But if he's coming through during the playoff stretch and in the playoffs, that's all you need if you manage to make it there, of course. But Matt Olson is doing exactly what Matt Olson does, hit home runs in bunches, and he's easily going to hit 30 home runs. I would bank it. If there was a bet over 30 home runs for Matt Olson for the rest of the season, I would bet it. I would slam that bet because I fully believe that they're going to come in bunches. The Braves are actually like right in the NL East race, which is crazy to think of with no Strider, no Acuna, no Albies, no Riley. It's insane. It really is nuts because they play the Phillies right now. They play a 4-game series against them. And if they sweep them, they're only 1 game behind the Phillies for the East. So it makes no sense, but the Braves are motivated. The Braves are going to heat up as they always do. And they're somehow going to win the division because that's just what they do. And Matt Olson's going to be a huge part of that. So you just wait and watch the Matt Olson explosion. I'm at least banking on it for the playoffs. And then Lawrence Butler, I will talk more about him later on because, hint, hint, I recommend him as a streamer. But he is legit. I think he is the real deal. It stinks that he's on Oakland, but he is legit. And then Kyle Stowers, it's a great game from him. It's great to see that Stowers and Norby are both getting playing time, being on Miami now. And man, what a bad trade that was, by the way. I remember slamming that trade for being terrible right when it happened because Trevor Rogers is not worth those two guys, and those two guys are killing it now on the Marlins. So shout out to them, and bad luck for the Orioles.
Yeah, it was one of those trades where it was just kind of like the Orioles were like, well, we can't play these guys, so we might as well trade them for something. Unfortunately, right. That something is Trevor Rogers. So.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Super unfortunate. Anyways, moving on to the pitchers who aren't maybe as exciting. We're going to start with Aaron Civale of the Brewers going up against the Giants. 7 innings, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. No one runs. Let's be honest, Civale doesn't offer a lot in fantasy. Through 26 games, he's only got 7 quality starts. Even on a top team like Milwaukee, he's only managed 2 wins in 8 starts there. He's still occasionally worth a stream, but unfortunately, even with those streams, he's not very reliable. Matchup agnostic. At least in this start, his cutter was on point. He got 5 whiffs, coupled with a sinker that earned 5 called strikes, finishing the night with a 30% CSW. So, not bad. He gets the Cardinals next. That's maybe a start that I would maybe consider starting him. Although I think his rostership is so high that he might not even be available as a streamer, but hey, you know, if he's available, maybe take him there against the Cards. And then Jack Kochanowicz, I think.
That's a good guess. I don't know, so I think you're right.
I learned who he was last week because Austin Riley was facing him when Atlanta faced the Angels, and I was like, oh, this guy's, I've never heard of him. Cool. Anyway, he played Detroit today, 6 innings, 5 hits, no one runs, and 4 strikeouts. This was a fascinating game as Kochanowicz threw 79% sinkers. You heard that right, 79%. He got 8 called strikes with that pitch, but the main thing was getting grounders. Man, just like a pitcher that I remember playing for the Twins, like in the early 2000s. This was like their jam, just throwing junk in the zone and hoping that all those balls in play end up as grounders. So that's kind of what happened with Kochanowicz. He had 16 balls in play off that sinker. Only got 4 hits off of those. He gets Texas next, and I am just not trusting him there at all. The pitch breakdown is hilarious. It's just literally a bunch of sinkers in the zone, and he's just hoping guys just top it or just hit it straight into the ground, and it results in a lot of outs. So, yeah, just risky, risky baseball. But it worked out against Detroit. It might not work against Texas.
These two guys don't offer too much for fantasy. Savali is a streamer, in my opinion. Now, I've always been a huge Savali fan, too, when he was on the Guardians, and I was all in on him. I really liked Savali. Like 2 seasons ago, I was all in on him, and I even wrote an article about him on my own website before I joined PitcherList. So, yeah, very cool to see Savali actually doing something and just being a streamer, I guess. I do like that matchup against the Cardinals, so maybe I would do that stream there. But overall, I'm probably just avoiding Savali everywhere. And then Kochanowicz, which I hope that's how you say his name. Sorry if we're butchering it, Jack. But yeah, I don't really see it going well against the Rangers. Even though the Rangers haven't been too great, I just still don't trust it at all. But hey, great start against the Tigers. Really promising there. And 79% sinkers is quite wild. But that wraps up the player performances from this past week. Great stuff there. But it's time to move on to the streamers for next week. John, which pitchers are we recommending this time around?
Yeah, some interesting names here. Trying to go for a little bit of spicy streamers, I guess. We're going to start with Cade Povich of the Baltimore Orioles. 2% rostered on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. Povich just really has not had a very good start to his major league career. He's gone 1-for-6 with a 6.1 ERA. That being said, though, he was very good in the minors, and that's why Baltimore keeps believing in him in terms of his strikeouts and his ERA. Really solid numbers in the minors. So there's clearly something to like. According to roster resource, he gets the White Sox on Tuesday. I would check on that just to make sure, but that could be a good confidence boost for Povich. This is, of course, a risky start, and we just saw Jack Leiter go up against the White Sox and only manage 4 innings. So Povich has a little bit more experience under his belt, I guess, in the major league level, so maybe Baltimore is willing to let him go a little bit longer. That being said, it's Baltimore versus the White Sox, so if Povich goes 5, this is most likely a win. So if you're win chasing, I think there's some good opportunities here. If you're strikeout chasing, yeah, it's a little riskier, but not the worst idea. Our next guy we're going to talk about, Patrick Corbin. Again, we talked about him a bunch. I can't believe I'm recommending him to be a streamer. He's 3% roster on Yahoo, 1% on ESPN. But he gets Miami on Tuesday, then he gets Pittsburgh, and then Miami again. And yeah, if that cutter is legit and it's really setting up his other pitch as well, then go for it. Finally, Luis L. Ortiz of the Pittsburgh Pirates, 70% on Yahoo, 5% on ESPN rostership. He gets the Nationals on Friday, and while there is things to like in his overall numbers this season, he's got a 3.36 ERA, 34% ideal contact rate. The problem is everything else just isn't very good, and he's been incredibly inconsistent the entire season. Every time it's like, oh, he'd be a good stream here, he'd be a good stream here, and it just doesn't work out. That being said, though, he did well against Cincinnati on Sunday. He goes up against Cleveland this coming Saturday. And if that start goes really well, I would really start him with confidence against the Nationals on Friday. If it's a little bit iffier, you know, obviously don't go crazy for it. But it is one of those opportunities that I'm like, eh, he's got the stuff. If he can put it all together, that could be a good start against the Nationals.
This might be the first time that I don't rank the streamers. And that's because I think they're all just good options that I would probably utilize if I need them in their situations.
Yeah.
So if I'm win chasing, I would go with Cade Povich because the Nationals, even though they're against the Marlins, you never know if the Nationals will win or the offense will show up. Luis L. Ortiz against the Nationals, same thing. The Pirates, you never know if they're going to score against the Nationals. Like, you just don't know. But if you definitely need a win, Cade Povich on the Orioles, a team that's likely to win against the White Sox, which is a team that's likely to lose,
mm-hmm.
that's a good win chance there. So I like that if you need wins. If you need strikeouts, I probably like Patrick Corbin the most because you never know. He can rack up a lot against a struggling Marlins offense. And then the Ortiz stream, he's just been very good all around. So I like him if you just want the best floor out of all the streamers. So I'm not going to rank them. I'm just going to say that if you need them in a certain circumstance, Povich for wins, Corbin for strikeouts, and Luis L. Ortiz for just overall good ratios, then those are the plays that you make. And heck, you could stream all of them if you want. But moving on to the hitter streamers for this upcoming week, it's two names that I mentioned. Once again, it's very hard to suggest hitter streamers nowadays because everyone is in a different size league. Some of these guys are rostered everywhere in 15-team leagues by now, in 14-team leagues, even 12-team leagues. But on certain platforms, they're not rostered over 50%. And those are the kind of guys I'm recommending, the guys that are under 50% rostered, because they're either rostered by the active teams or people just haven't looked and haven't seen what they're doing and they're just out there on the wire. So I might as well mention them because if they're out there, you might want to grab them. The first guy is Pete Crow Armstrong of the Cubs. He's got outfield eligibility, of course. He's 35% rostered on Yahoo, up 28% in the last week. Like I mentioned earlier, the past 2 weeks, he's been killing it. PCA has been on fire as of late, stealing bases like crazy, scoring runs, driving runs in, and even hitting the occasional homer. He usually bats 8th in the lineup, so he may lose a few at-bats due to that. But while he's on a stretch like this, you have to pick him up and let him fly. With 99th percentile sprint speed, the stolen bases are legit and could come in bunches. As John mentioned earlier, he's mainly just a steal guy. I don't think he's going to provide much power. He's never had that in his profile, really. He hit 20 in the minors, but he can hit around 10 to 15 home runs. I think that's his ceiling. But he's young and you never know what he can grow into. He might be a 20-60 type of guy. We might be talking him as the next Corbin Carroll soon. So I don't know. I don't know what the fate of Pete Crow Armstrong is, but right now he's been amazing. PCA has always been a top prospect as well, and it's cool to see him get his chance and hit a stride. I just wish it was on the Mets instead of having that awesome thumbs down half of a season era of Javi Baez. Thanks a lot. That was terrible, but PCA has been great. So if he's out there, I would recommend using him at least until the flame burns out. And then lastly, a guy that I've talked about the entire episode so far, Lawrence Butler, Athletics outfielder, 47% rostered on Yahoo. Butler was massively picked up earlier in the season when he was on fire, kind of around the same time he hit 3 home runs in one game earlier this season. But then he hit a little bit of a cold spell and was dropped by the masses. People just thought it was a flash in the pan and said, hey, let's get rid of this guy. After that cold stretch, however, he's been fantastic. Butler has now homered 5 times in 3 games. He's homered in 3 straight games as of right now. He has an 8-game hit streak and is doing everything that you could want from a player for fantasy. He's 84th percentile in expected slug, average exit velocity, hard hit percentage, and bat speed. So all of the signs are pointing to Butler being legit. If for some reason he's unrostered in your league, I'd pick him up because he can definitely be a league winner down the stretch, even if he plays for the Athletics. He's been freakishly good. The stats are there. He can hit home runs. He can steal bases. He can do it all. So Lawrence Butler, definitely go and pick him up if you have him on the wire. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I hope that you all enjoyed. Before you all go, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL and send us your comments and questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter at TheJohnKeh. That's THEJOHNKE. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, remember to subscribe to or follow the Pitcherless Podcast feed and this podcast, This Week in Fantasy Baseball, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. Just go to pitcherless.com, look for Pitcherless Plus, and sign up today. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.